Hi, I'm Mackie Smith. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center. I'm joined by Chrisanna Finlay on the right and Ava Lopez on the left. You'll notice that today we have three millennials running the show. We took a little bit of time stepping away from our avocado toast so we could talk to all of you about policy and politics, both nationwide and at the state level. So let's just jump in on the biggest issue that I'm sure no one is tired of talking about or listening to, the coronavirus. Recently, this last week, we reached the 50% mark of Americans being fully vaccinated. Ava, jumping into this, how would you assess President Biden's rollout of the vaccine and implementation of the strategy that Donald Trump set last year?
Oh, yeah. I mean, first off, an amazing rollout. I think, we were looking at different points at this nation. We didn't think that we'd get the vaccine available so readily. On top of that, folks identifying need for different populations, different demographics that weren't reaching to it. You know, you even see other folks that identify as conservative or Republican calling for folks to get vaccinated. That way we can get on top of really just working, going back to strategizing, to getting people economically serving this country. So I'm really excited about it. I think I think a lot of this has to do with, in general, President Biden's first 100-day plan was to get after this. So I'm really excited about it.
Chrisanna, from the right perspective, how would you evaluate these first 100 days of the Biden presidency?
Yeah, I think Biden is doing well, and I think we shouldn't forget about how much work that was done last year with Trump and his team and setting up all of these vaccines to be created and studied and to be deployed. And so I'm really excited. I think also too, I hate to say it, but we're not done yet, guys. We still have a lot of ways to go. There's a lot of variants that are out there, and especially I think it was just this last week or so that the variant in India, the B1617, was changed to a variant of interest, to a variant of concern. And so that is, it's a highly transmissible variant. It's also a lot more deadly compared to what has occurred so far. So I hate to say it, but I don't think we're done. And I would not be surprised if, you know, we'll have some similar situations as we have in the past in over the last year. So
you speak like someone who works in healthcare consulting as your professional background.
I do. and public health. Yes. So,
man. And so on the international level regarding the COVID vaccine rollout, there's been the topic of some vaccine inequity going on. More than 75% of all vaccines have been administered in just 10 countries. Ava, what role should the United States play at facilitating and helping some of these poorer countries gain better access to the vaccine?
Yeah, I think one of the things we've seen already is that President Biden's announced that we're not going to stand in the way of the WHO allowing other countries to roll out their own vaccination processes. I think really as a country, we see Americans traveling already globally. There's lots of reasons why it benefits us to help out different countries, neighboring countries that need that facilitation. I mean, I read this and, we have countries like Venezuela, for example. They are not just still struggling with corona and receiving vaccination, but they're also struggling with having just security in governance. So, you know, I think the United States has a lot to play with this and helping stabilize nations. And really, at the end of the day, that saves lives. And I think that's what our country stands for.
And Chrisanna, how would you evaluate Utah's rollout, or rather rollout of the vaccine, but also transition away from masks? Many of our listeners who have children in the school system are enjoying this final week of school where they're not wearing masks in school. Where do you feel the state of Utah has been compared to other states on moving away from masks and relying more on the honor code system with vaccines?
That's a great question. I kind of have to think about it for a moment because I mean, Utah is a conservative state, so we do care a lot about our freedom and be able to live and get back to normal as soon as possible. I think there are also individuals here that are conservative or liberal or whatever that still want to wear their masks. And I think no matter what, we can't draw any assumptions on individuals who are wearing their masks and who they are and why they may or may not be wearing masks. And so I think overall that should be something that we keep in mind. And I think no matter what, I think people can harp on leadership and the mistakes that they may have made over the last year with coronavirus and with our return to normal. But any leader makes mistakes. and good leaders learn from their mistakes. And so I think, you know, if we do have leaders that have those kinds of attributes that are open to learn from their mistakes and to rectify things as quickly as possible and to build policies that represent its people, then that's what really matters.
Ava, any final thoughts on Utah's rollout of the coronavirus?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think, and I love the way that Utah pursued this right away. Governor Cox came in and immediately said, I think, took it up with the challenge. There were a few mistakes made along the way in different counties. You know, the rollout was so different where I was hearing of people in Salt Lake County having to go to Davis County or to Utah County. That way they could find that vaccination. It was difficult at first, but I think we saw nationally Utah leading, and all of a sudden, everybody had the ability to receive vaccinations that needed it immediately. And then we opened it up more. And amongst that, we saw Governor Cox create a team to better articulate the inequities that we're talking about demographically. I'm Latina. You know, Latinos all of a sudden were getting infected at much higher rates without having access to vaccinations or protection. You know, these are folks that typically maybe don't have insurance available or the funds to take care and manage that. Other POC populations experience that as well. So, you know, I think that's one of the mistakes that we saw in leadership, and they try to rectify that. So overall, I'm very pleased. We obviously see the state is getting back on track, I think. And again, we're still the number one economy, even with that fallout. The year's been really difficult for a lot of different ways, but I think what we've seen is a huge success and an applaud to Utah's leadership currently.
Awesome. And public health departments.
That is absolutely true.
Please,
yes,
let's applaud public health professionals.
For those of you listening, you might go, man, when are they going to start fighting and arguing? But you'll notice that our generation is pretty united on some of these fronts.
It's the avocado toast.
It's the avocado toast. We're all drinking that same Kool-Aid. So
it brought unity to us all.
So. Speaking to what Ava talked about, it specifically on the topic of inequity, this week was the one-year anniversary of the passing of George Floyd. There's currently discussions in Congress about what appropriate police reform legislation should be passed. Utah itself passed police reform legislation banning certain chokeholds. Various states across the country have implemented, whether it's body cams, other forms of police oversight. Ava, what do you feel is next? Should Republicans sign the George Floyd bill, or where do you feel that a compromise could or should be made?
Yeah, this is obviously a very personal issue to a lot of people around the country, especially in Utah. You know, to hit that accord, that balance between your Second Amendment rights, not just also with enforcement individuals, but, you know, helping these folks that are employed, that are seeking a career in police enforcement, while at the same time, right, protecting folks that have been targeted, have been identified or mishandled and abused in their cases. So, I think the accord that we can strike here, I mean, I would hope that most folks after the last year would want to sign this bill. But, I see at least here in this state, I don't foresee that there'll be any sort of reform of that kind. So I'm cautiously optimistic, but again, yeah, so.
Chrisanna, what do you feel is Republicans' main hesitation on signing some of the bills or agreeing to some of the bills that Democrats have been putting forward regarding police reform?
I think it's mostly just hesitancy around the implications and what might happen down the road. I think there's a lot of bipartisanship around this, and to be able to, you know, everyone wants to be free and everyone wants to be safe. And so being able to come across the aisle and be able to build policies that reflect that and to be able to kind of break down any racism or whatever might be there, I think is really important. So I think no matter whatever side you're on, and if you disagree with someone, it's because you are afraid of the implications of that certain policy and what will happen down the road. You know, if those bills are signed, what does that mean for us right now? What does it mean for us 10 years, 20, 30 years down the road? So I think that's just something to think about.
To press a little deeper real quickly, if certain bills like this are passed, do you think that's going to make the challenge of recruiting police officers even more difficult, as we do have a shortage in that field?
Yeah. I think I wanted to add to that. I work for Salt Lake City Corporation here, and that is a difficulty that we're having right now. We're looking at hiring laterally even, and we are the capital city here, which means we respond in a way for the demographic and the size of a capital city that we have. We're also a cultural hub, which means we have diverse activities happening. And I think one of the successes that I've learned is our officers also want a safe space, right? They also want change, but they want it in a way that allows them to feel comfortable in this employment field, right? There's a reason why people don't want to be officers right now, and it's because they feel very uncomfortable with the task being asked. What happens when you have the ability to use a trigger on someone? What happens when that becomes your only use of force and you become liable, or that legally allows you to? So I think as a nation, really, we have to look at that. Is this response accurate? Is this what we want to be a response?
I think we can all agree, based on what you're talking about, that we have been putting police officers in a position to fail without having the proper resources to address mental health needs, other issues that of calls that they face. And so I think this is another issue where bipartisanship is really needed. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Mackie Smith with Ava Lopez on the left and Chrisanna Finlay on the right. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Ava Lopez on the left.
Chrisanna Finlay on the right.
Mackie Smith in the political middle. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. And we're back talking about local issues now. We just had a great conversation about George Floyd and the national level. Speaking of race issues, critical race theory. The House and the Senate both passed a resolution sending it to the state school board to look into this topic further. And if they don't come up with recommendations in the next legislative session, they're going to move forward with some action on restricting that being taught in schools. Ava, I see your frustration on your face. Talk to me a little bit about what you're
feeling. Oh, it's a big smile. It's a big smile. I think in general, there's misunderstanding what critical race theory is. I love the Utah way. It's always a study first, and then we're going to decide later. And I think what we're going to find in this study is it's not taught currently in K-12. It's not in public school systems. It's in higher education. I took an ethnic studies class when I was a freshman at the University of Utah, and that's where I was first introduced to this. It's just a framework that you can look through. It's a perspective to see racial inequities through. I mean, we talk about these things. We practice it. State legislatures that are both conservative and liberal practice critical race theory without acknowledging or knowing what that really means. It's not going to undermine any sort of education that children might have because, again, it's not taught to them. It's something that you'll find really just academically in higher education. I think at least there's a fear I can understand where if you have misinformation, you might be afraid that somehow this is going to undermine your freedoms or rights or your children's ability to learn on an issue, right? I think people think all of a sudden this is some weird knowledge that shouldn't be taught, that somehow this is rewriting American history. It's not. In fact, it allows us to look deeper at the truths of American history.
Chrisanna, Republicans love the concept of trickle down. Do you feel that some of this preemptiveness on the critical race theory ban is to avoid these topics, as Ava was pointing out, trickling down from higher education into K-12?
Yeah, I think so. I would say that one thing that I don't think something you said really takes into account is the developmental perspective of children. And I think, you know, if critical race theory is something that can be great to learn about, and I think it's important for us to look back on history. And I think we also need to bring in those perspectives and that kind of education at a developmentally appropriate place and time. Because I do worry about the trickle-down effect because a lot of these types of exercises or this teaching is being done with younger ages, and they don't truly understand some of those concepts. And I don't think that introducing them earlier on is actually helpful. I think it can be harmful.
Ava, response to that?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say again, I haven't heard of any sort of teachings of this happening to youth. I think what's great is that you have history classes. You know, I grew up in Idaho, and I can think K through 12, for example, lots of different historical moments that were taught, never really with a perspective, rather just saying, you know, World War II happened, this is what happened to this demographic. Again, I think that idea is far beyond what will happen to allow CRT currently. And if the legislature wants to pursue something that says, okay, this age group will not learn about it, again, I would say it's incorrect to censor it. We need the freedoms to be able to choose and deliver the knowledge that we have to children. I think it's something that, honestly, as a Latina, as somebody that was born from immigrant parents from Mexico, I would have loved to learn about this. I think this would have helped me understand more of the position that my family's in. So I think it would empower students.
Personally, as a big fan of American history, I feel a little shortchanged in my childhood that the only, let's just talk about black historical figures, the only people we knew about were maybe Frederick Douglass, but mostly Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King. And I think I think a lot of this topic could be applied into U.S. history teaching, just so people can understand that we all built this country together, regardless of your racial background. Moving on to another topic, the Utah housing market. The median price of houses just skyrocketed again this last week. The number is around $425,000. If you're listening to this and you bought your home for significantly less than that, I am extremely jealous of you. But what should the role of the state government, specifically this Republican legislature, be to help citizens who are dealing with housing affordability, Chrisanna?
Oh, gosh, that's such a big question. I mean, first of all, I just think millennials, there isn't a lot of voice here for us because we are the largest demographic in Utah, and we are the ones that do want to buy a home. A lot of old stereotypes would say, oh, millennials, we just want apartments and we just want to rent and travel and be free. But no, right now we do want homes. We want stability. We want a place for ownership and for our families and to be able to build that kind of financial stability over time. And so I think it's really important that we aren't misrepresented in that way.
But what specifically should the markets dictate the housing costs? I mean, people are coming from California. They have a higher willingness to pay. Supply and demand is running rampant right now.
Yes.
But should markets and economics and free market principles direct this, or should the state government come in and try and direct this?
Right. Yes, this is such a great question. And honestly, as a conservative Republican, I think it would be really easy to say, you know, you just got to let the market roll as is. But being in the middle of it and just seeing the difficulty of being able to own a home and basically being priced out, right? Especially because the individuals who are employed in tech, they have on average, an extremely larger type of revenue stream for themselves in comparison to the rest of the population in Utah. So I think it's important that we aren't priced out and this doesn't just become a place where people who are in tech can work in Utah. So honestly, I'm not quite sure where the balance lies in between government and the market in this housing crisis. So,
Ava, thoughts on what the government's role is in housing affordability?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that affect housing affordability. We're looking at lumber prices skyrocket. We're looking at not enough workers for the demand that's needed, right? Everybody has jobs in construction right now, but there's still not enough, right? Mm-hmm. Even with, I believe we're building on average about 40,000 homes a year, plus the sum of homes that go up for sale that were already built. That's still not enough to fill in the demand that's there in Utah. So, you know, I think what can be done is understanding again that wage of livability, that is the gap that's stopping us from getting there. If we're going to allow this free market to dictate where our housing is, which I predict is what our legislators are going to do. I don't think they're that interested in helping reduce the cost, or rather a correction of the market, because right now it's going to be inflated. But unfortunately, not to be a pessimist, I think we're going to see this inflation happen over the next 10 years. Utah is a golden gem here, and I think people want to be here. And like you said, don't want to blame it on the Californians, but maybe we can agree to this.
A little bit.
We
please, let's unite together, Democrats and Republicans. Californians, go away.
Well, if you're already here, you can stay, but just tell your friends not to come. We're closing the door after you.
I shouldn't say that.
We're not kicking them out.
Yeah. Love to all.
Love them.
I think it's also just important to realize that overall, the government's role is to help mitigate negative externalities that exist in the market when the market itself is not going to fix the issue, right? So air quality is one. You don't have your car companies, they don't really care about the emissions naturally. And so that's when government steps in to try to regulate those emissions. So overall, we can still have, you know, breathable air. So in this market, I do think that the government needs to have a role because the negative externality does exist. But finding out what that is, I think is, you know, that would take more time, a longer conversation to figure it out, because they can step in and try to build affordable housing. You know, they can try to address NIMBYism, but that, you know, NIMBYism more than anything is on a local level rather than a state level. So
I think there's a lot of tools in the tool belt that the legislator can enact. And I think if they continue to kick this can down the road, it's only going to get worse. And we're going to have to be reactionary instead of proactive. It's already too late. It's reactionary no matter what. Ava.
I think a good fix to this is give us tiny homes. You know, help us look at the land use that we have in Utah. There's so many barriers and I have so many ideas. So, you know, that's ultimately, I mean, a lot of it comes down to land. We have only so much land available to build also.
Mm-hmm. So as we wrap up, we have a topic or a new segment for just today. It's called Quick Millennial Thoughts. I just made that up on the spot. We don't even know if that's what it's going to be called.
That's a good one, but we're running with it.
So I'm going to shoot off a couple quick topics that us millennials are talking about and just give me a quick answer. Ava, with cryptocurrencies, Dogecoin, Bitcoin, do you feel that the government needs to step in and regulate these volatile markets?
To the moon.
Yeah. Elon Musk is our friend.
I mean, not right now, but it's interesting. I think we need regulation. Yes, we do, because we need taxation on these assets. At the same time, this is a gold mine for us millennials to make money.
Chrisanna, for you, should we expand Medicare to cover people in our middle age group who are not young enough or old enough to qualify?
I think that we need to really think about the financial implications of expanding Medicare, especially because we have a huge baby boomer population that is only going to expand, and we will not be able to afford supporting them in the next, you know, 15 or 20 years, even as is, let alone expanding Medicare. So I really want and hope that our policy leaders start really thinking more about the millennial generation rather than just the baby boomer generation.
Our next millennial-related topic, big tech. A lot of people are feeling that they can't voice their opinions on the internet, that these companies are really controlling free speech, especially the fact when you consider that we are, this past year, we've been forced to be in our homes, isolating, so our only way of interacting with other people is through social media, and now that's being regulated. Ava, do you feel that we have a problem with big tech infringing on free speech, especially those of conservative
Leaders? I mean, I'd actually push back. I think it's happening to people all over the aisle. You know, we see this with different wars, different shootings happening. And you know, you see the positive effects of such information just being spread out through social media. At the same time, there's fundamental rights to having access to this information, to these tools to spread information out. So I don't know. I mean, I keep reading about it. I think it's really interesting that these companies are taking such a strong stance. I think if I were to predict, we're going to see more stronger stances, more people being isolated away from these social networks that we, I mean, that's our generation. That is how we communicate. That is how we're constantly spreading information. So it's a very useful tool. At the same time, I think what we saw last year is there was this grand fear that all of a sudden we would lose direction, that there was misinformation being spread. So now we're seeing this grand gesture of censorship.
Chrisanna, your thoughts on this? Is this just companies taking part in cancel culture?
Yeah, I think companies' role is to provide services, not a political position. And so I think they need to kind of stick in their lane. And especially when it comes to, I mean, it is difficult, though, because when they provide a platform like Facebook for freedom to reign, you know, there's a lot of good and bad that can happen on that platform. And so government needs to get on track and be able to catch up with technology. Whether that's going to happen, we're not sure, but that does need to happen. And I do think there is some some censorship that's happening that shouldn't happen, and that is marginalizing certain voices and perspectives. And I don't think that individuals should be canceled because they believe differently than other people.
From the center view, I just feel we all need consistency. And right now there's a lack of clear lines in the sand of what the rules are. When you have Donald Trump, who's not allowed on Twitter, but then you have the head of the Ayatollah who is, there, that screams that there might be some inconsistencies there. So I think that's something that we definitely need to address. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Mackie Smith. I've been joined by Chrisanna Finlay on the right and Ava Lopez on the left. Thank you to our producer, Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.